I wanted to talk to you today, brethren, a little bit about things that I think all of us from time to time find ourselves being faced with. And that is, I think you would agree, if you're like me, that occasionally life, I think all of us fall into this category, tends to get away from us. And sometimes we fall into ruts, don't we? Little ruts. Conditions where life kind of gets into these situations where we just feel like we're bogged down in some cases. Maybe we're overwhelmed. We get into these cycles where it seems as though perhaps our performance in what we're doing isn't like it ought to be, or like we know we could have it or was at one time. But now, for whatever reason, maybe it's a bit of a health issue that knocked us out of the saddle for a little while, and a different habit gets developed over time, or a different approach or focus due to some distractions in life, maybe external or even internal, whatever it may be, causes us to find ourselves maybe not as performing as good as we would as under usual conditions. And we call them sometimes ruts. Times when, you know, we don't spend our time like we ought to. Things that oftentimes, as I say, find us being impacted by not doing what we have been normally used to doing. And frankly, it's nothing to be ashamed about. I mean, it happens to all of us, the best of us, as they would say. From time to time, I think all of us have to kind of look at life and reload, recock, reassess, and perhaps reevaluate what we're doing and get a fresh look at things, you know, and back up a little bit, slow down, take an overhaul, comprehensive look at perhaps what we're doing and how we're doing it, and try to maybe think about a different approach, think about a different way, think about changing a habit to break a cycle, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying. And from time to time, I think all of us, we go through this, and that's why it's nothing to be ashamed of, because we're all like that. We all find ourselves from time to time, as I say, falling into ruts. Well, today I want to talk a little bit about time and how time underscores, if we don't manage that time, these ruts, and can cause, if we let time get away from us and allow us to fall into these ruts, but specifically as it applies to holy time, the Sabbath day. I want to talk about finding ourselves falling into ruts on the Sabbath day. Now, the Sabbath is holy time, as we're told, right? Bible says, remember the Sabbath. God almost as though anticipates the fact that we as physical human beings would forget the Sabbath. And rightly so, because life has a way, does it not, of distracting us, causing us to get off the point of the Sabbath, to allow things to come in on the Sabbath that oftentimes causes the Sabbath, if we're not careful, to actually merge into becoming just another day. Like a Monday, like a Tuesday, like a Thursday or a Friday. It just all of a sudden kind of blends and no longer is that special time. But it is a very special time, and it is very important, because basically the Sabbath is a time that should be devoted toward edifying ourselves. See, life, and for most people, is just a menagerie of pursuing things. They call us consumers for a reason, you know. We're always consuming. And we're always thinking about what we can do. We're always thinking about where we can go. We're always thinking about maybe what we can eat. We're thinking about other things that take up our time and our attention. And oftentimes, most people do not discipline themselves on a regular basis to stop and think about how to live. The world is good. The world is good on teaching us how to make a living. You can go to Yale. You can go to Harvard. You can go down here to the local community college. You can go to Cleveland State. You can go to a lot of good colleges, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and learn a lot of good principles on how to make a living. And sometimes become very successful, very rich, very high-powered, depending on the career path you choose to go. But very few institutions today teach people how to live. And when you compound that with the fact that because, as I've often said, life comes at us fast and furious, we don't take the time to discipline ourselves to keep that day holy. You compound the fact by allowing the Sabbath to become just another day. Guess what we've done? We've compounded our vulnerability to become unspiritual. Unspiritual. Because what's the Sabbath for? To connect us up spiritually, right? To God. That's what it's for. That's one part of it, of course. There's a lot of things for the Sabbath that the Sabbath can do for us in terms of benefits to us and for us. But certainly what underscores the Sabbath above all things is it should be a day that provides us the time, 24 hours, one full revolution of the earth, one opportunity that provides us 24 hours roughly to devote to developing, bonding, connecting up with our God. The Sabbath has many benefits. I want to take opportunity here. The Sabbath should, one, provide perspective to our lives. It should also provide us with clarity to our lives. Actually, clarity to our objectives. It should also provide us with resolve to our commitments in our lives. It should also be and provide neutralization to our stresses. These are things, brethren, that it should do. That takes time to do. That takes time to do. We can add also that it should be, provide oasis to our lives. It should be a reprieve. It should be where we can exhale, take some time to relax, because nobody can go out and force you to cut the grass. Nobody can force you to fix the toilet. All us guys don't have to have Father's Day, just have to have the Sabbath day. You don't have to go and fix nothing. And the ladies can also take a break as well. No house cleaning. No really doing what things that you normally do. Maybe even, not necessarily, take all the time that you usually do when you cook. Maybe cut back a little bit or do some preparation on the day before, if possible, to minimize the cooking on this particular time or particular day. But it should definitely be, and this is certainly something that I think all of us can identify with, it should provide recharging to us and give us the charge that we need to face the next week, to provide us with the energy and, again, the resolve and the commitment and, as I say, the rededication of one's efforts toward continuing to do whatever you've got to do to muddle through whatever your life is putting you in and through. The Sabbath is, brethren, a very strong, effective tool to help you in your life. It really is. Unfortunately, most people do not recognize the Sabbath for the value that it presents. But the problem is, all of this that the Sabbath should do for us, perspective, clarity, resolve, neutralization, an oasis, recharging, which are all benefits. They're not features. People might say, well, these are features, Bill. No. They're benefits, because you can translate into how you feel. How does recharging benefit you? How does neutralizing your stresses benefit you? Well, it can benefit you by maybe lowering your blood pressure. It can benefit you by perhaps allowing you to feel more relaxed and less anxious and less nervous about certain things, because you know God has your best interest at heart. And how do you know that? Because you're taking the time to reassure yourself in this oasis of refreshment that provides you with the opportunity to do some things on the Sabbath that perhaps during the week You don't have the time to do it because of the demands you have on your life, whether it be your job, your career pursuits, your friends, other obligations that you might have, and all those things. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because I want to ultimately get to some suggestions that I'd like to leave with all of you today. But the point of it is, this is not easy to do. It's not easy to do. Many of us fall off, as they would say, the wagon, because life has a tendency to knock us out of the saddle from time to time. Oh, it's so-and-so's birthday! Oh, we gotta go here! You know? Oh, the boss is calling! Oh, I got an emergency! Yeah, whatever it may be. And granted, there are reasons. There are horses in the ditches on the Sabbath day that are indeed and in fact legitimate. I say that figuratively speaking. Emergencies come up. They come up in all of our lives. We all have things that come up that we have to tend to immediately. And sometimes maybe it is on the Sabbath. And there's nothing you can do about it. In my business, when I ran my water treatment business, I was always vulnerable to emergencies because a lot of my customers were in the medical field. And so what I would do is I would install what I called bypass valves, subtitled Sabbath valves. And I learned a long time ago that when the phone rang and I was the only cook, chief cook and bottle washer of my company starting it, I would pick up the answering service and they would say, oh, Cleveland Clinic's got an emergency. You got to go to the dialysis. I'd say, oh, no. I just pick up the phone, call the guy and tell him to turn valve number 12. You'd be on bypass till the night. When the sun set, I'd show up. But I mean, that's the way you do it. You plan, you see, but sometimes we're not always that good at planning, and consequently we become vulnerable to being knocked out of the saddle. How we become vulnerable in being knocked out of the saddle is we fail to, and the reason this happens is because we allow our time to get away from us. We allow intrusions to distract. We allow interruptions to divert. Somebody calls and you go, but we allow it. And we allow encroachments to incrementally develop a lifestyle. Brethren, if you're going to be a Christian, you can't make apologies for this. You cannot let this world encroach on God's time. Because see, this is not your time. Like it or not, this is not your time. That is spiritual. You want to know something spiritual? That is spiritual. There is a spirit being called Yahweh who at the beginning of creation, in his spirit form, breathed air into a being called Adam. On the sixth day, Genesis chapter 1. Chapter 2 of Genesis, which means the beginning, he spent that time teaching Adam. And he blessed that day, the seventh day, of which one of the 12 tribes, the only remaining tribe on earth today that has a direct connection to this Bible and that book in the Torah called Genesis, the Jews who keep the Sabbath day have not allowed that day to be lost. God made sure of that. Not them. God made sure. But through them, we see the reflection of that day, that spiritual day, because God put his presence in that day. Today. Today is the Sabbath day. Not tomorrow, Sunday. No. That's the first day. Monday is the second day. Not any day is the Sabbath day. That's not true. That's not right. The Bible says one day is the Sabbath day. The seventh day. That's the day God put his presence in it, set it apart and sanctified it, and of which then, from that point on, has become holy time. That's spiritual. That is spiritual for all of us to realize and to recognize. And we need to understand that. Hence the challenge. The world and Satan and all of his minions are bound and determined to get you to compromise this day. They will do their devil-headed best to do what they can to get you to violate this day, to merge it, and to compromise it to the point where it means nothing to you anymore. Because they don't like this day. Why? It has a direct spiritual, I want to emphasize that. It's spiritual. It's a definite spiritual connection to God. And he doesn't want you connected to God. Especially with this much time on your hands to devote to what I'm about to share with you. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want that to be part of our lifestyle. So he provides us these encroachments that incrementally come upon us that result in developing different lifestyles in us, of which hopefully, God willing, being Christians as we are, and due to the fact that we're always reviewing ourselves, examining ourselves, reevaluating ourselves, reassessing our lives, we take time to take a few steps back and say, what am I doing? Man, I'm out of sync here. I've got to get back on track. And then we wipe out those encroachments and rearrange the lifestyle to bring it back into the formation of what the Sabbath should be. Of what the Sabbath should be. And that's important because these encroachments are subtle due to the fact that the method is incremental. It's the proverbial frog in the water. The heat gets turned up slowly. The poor frog doesn't know. He just kind of gets comfortable because the water's starting to warm up. And then all of a sudden he's cooked. And he's done. And lo and behold, it's too late to jump out of the water. And he's got a whole different lifestyle developed. And all along here, brethren, decisions are made that cause us to fail the discipline of the time and, of course, ourselves, which as a result, as I say, usually will result then in the violation of the Sabbath. Over here in Isaiah chapter 58, I'm going to turn back here to lay down some premises about the Sabbath, of which we've been talking about. And remember, in Mark 2 and in verse 27, Mark 2 and in verse 27, Jesus said, the Sabbath was made for man. Remember that? The Sabbath was made for man. That means the Sabbath serves us. We don't serve the Sabbath. In other words, it should not be viewed as a burden. Oh, man, the Sabbath is here. I got to stop everything. Bad. Gets in my way. Wish I didn't have the Sabbath. Bogs me down. Crimps my style. Boy. No. That's not the way it is. The Sabbath actually was made for us to benefit by. Now, we got to get to that point. Because being human, we don't gravitate to that naturally. Naturally, most people would view somebody telling you what to do, like God saying, this is holy time, and I expect you to, at this point, take time out of your normal busy life of 6 days of what you normally do and chill a little bit, and here's how I'd like you to chill, would look at that as infringement, impingement, interference on my life. How dare you say I should do this? Well, I'm only God, but most people unfortunately want God in their own image and as a result would prefer God not to say what I'm about to read here in verse 13 of Isaiah 58. He says, through the prophet Isaiah, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and that word pleasure means desire, your affairs, you put to side your plans, you put to the side, that's what he's saying. If you do that, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, not finding your own pleasures, nor speaking your own words. And this basically means doing your own business in the Hebrew syntax of the construction of this language. It means essentially stopping to do your business, preventing yourself from it. Then shall you delight yourself in the Lord. I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. What was the heritage of Jacob? Wealth. Not that I'm implying here that if you keep the Sabbath, you're going to be wealthy, because obviously Christians in third worlds, no matter how obedient they are to the Sabbath, they're going to be limited in many respects to their physical wealth capability and potential by virtue of just the environment that they're in. I mean, that's just the way it is. If you live in Kenya, or if you live in Zimbabwe, or someplace perhaps in the hills of Jamaica even, you're never going to have a CTS Cadillac parked in the front of your yard. It's just not going to happen in most cases. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the relationship primarily that you would have with God, which should be healthy and wealthy in that regard. And that certainly was the heritage of Jacob, to have a good relationship with God. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Now turn with me also real quickly here to Matthew chapter 12 to add some insight about the Sabbath. So the Sabbath should be a delight, and it should be a help, and it should be beneficial. And unfortunately, many people, as I said, look at the Sabbath as a burden. The Pharisees did that. The Pharisees looked at the Sabbath as a burden. Certainly did, and Jesus had to take them to task in many instances. And here in chapter 12, you see that. Here, verse 1, Jesus, the writer, that is Matthew, states, at that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, which was basically, should be more wheat. His disciples were hungry. They began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat it. Actually, it was wheat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, your disciples, that which is not lawful, do upon the Sabbath day. And what they were doing here is, this was wheat, they were taking it from the wheat, and they were now threshing. That was work to get to the wheat. That was how minuscule and picky the Pharisees were. It wasn't the fact that they picked the wheat out of the field. It was the fact that they picked it and then they started threshing it to get to the heart of the wheat for the flavor and, of course, the taste and the value, food value of it. And that's what the Pharisees were upset about. That goes back to the Talmud. It has nothing to do with the Ten Commandments. It goes back to the Talmud, the oral law. That's what Jesus was taking to task here. All these handwritten things that the Pharisees dreamed up and wrote down to try to legislate righteousness, which is certainly absurd and ridiculous. But at any rate, that's what he's doing and taking to task. And he says here in verse 3 now, but Jesus says to them, okay, have you not read what David did when he was hungered and they that were with him, how he entered into the house of God, the very temple, and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only the priests? In other words, what Jesus is doing here is he's trying to contrast the fact that, look, when human life is at stake here, these particular rules and laws are superseded. You have a certain leverage or leeway to afford. And Jesus was saying, look, God would want them to eat the showbread rather than it just sitting there on the altar when they're starving to death to save their lives. God is not that overbearing and that illogical that he would afford and prefer that David and his men would have died of hunger when there's perfectly good loaf of bread there in the altar of the temple. So what Jesus is saying is here, look, use common sense. God does. Verse 5, or have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Technically speaking, I'm working. This is what I get paid now to do. Am I breaking the Sabbath? Jesus says no. And yet I'm working. I'm making money today. I mean, this is what I get paid for. So if I wouldn't do this, you see, then guess what? We wouldn't have a spirit. You'd be probably happier than that, or happy for that. But my point is, there's some slack being cut here, obviously. The letter of the law doesn't apply in this case, because God made it that way, you see. Logic and common sense would tell us of such. But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple, talking, of course, about himself. But if you had known what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And when he was departed thence, he went into the synagogue, still on the Sabbath, he went into the synagogue. Behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. They asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? This is interesting now, because obviously the Pharisees didn't like this, that they might accuse him. And he said to them, what man shall there be among you? And here's Jesus using his logic, that shall have one sheep, and if it falls into the pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? Even an animal. I mean, if you saw an animal in need on the Sabbath, you would help it. Dog, cat, a sheep, a cow, whatever it might be. There were even rules that if the cow was in the mud up to a certain point, you did have legal right, at least according to the Pharisees, to pull the cow out of the mud. Now, if it wasn't up to the mud at that point, then you had to leave the cow all afternoon in the mud, go to synagogue, and then come back, and at night, after the sun set, go get the cow. And that was a little bit on the crazy side, having that kind of rule, because Jesus says here, there's no such rules as far as God is concerned in the Torah. Fact of it is, if an animal needs help, go help him. Go help him. He doesn't need to be in mud up to 3 feet instead of 2.5. You know, that's silliness. So he goes on here. How much then, verse 12, is a man better than a sheep? Well, it goes without saying. Wherefore, it is lawful. And here's the point, brethren. It's lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. And so often, we don't plan our Sabbaths. And see, this goes to this point that it is good to do well on the Sabbath. But sometimes to do well takes planning. We need to plan our Sabbaths. We really do. We need to plan our Sabbaths and then work our plan. We need to be in tune and engaged in our Sabbaths. We have helping hands. And we announce it for 4 or 5 weeks in a row. And we need to remember those things and be on tune, be in our game and plan to participate, plan to involve ourselves. We advertise, in our case here, about potlucks, now always on the last week of the month, the last Sabbath of the month. And we need to plan. Hey, I want to participate. I want to contribute to this because guess what? First piece of advice on the Sabbath. We need, especially if we have opportunity to do so, and brethren, I can tell you with all the travels that I do, there are many who do not have the opportunity to do what I'm about to share with you and mention in this regard, because I see them coming to these special meetings that are conducted in the areas that I travel, and I talk to them, and in some cases, that's the first fellowship opportunity they've had since the feast. Because they don't have congregations that they can meet with. So the first point of advice is, we need to plan when opportunity avails itself and we have that benefit of a congregation near us. We need to plan to attend. We need to plan to attend and fellowship. Fellowship is very, very important because it adds an element of reality to your Christian walk. Without fellowship, you have nothing more than book knowledge. And book knowledge will get you only so far. At some point, you got to come out of the study hall and get into the laboratory and actually get the Bunsen burner burning and start mixing all the chemicals to see if indeed you can make this thing work that you were taught and told about in the book, the study book. And in our case, the study book is here, and it gives us all this advice to do X. And if we don't have opportunity to do X, well, then what we have is just theory. But what God wants us to do is translate the theory into pragmatic activity, actual activity that generates real results, not only in your life, but in the lives of others that we need to be interacting with. And therein lies the importance of fellowship, because it gives us that opportunity. It gives us that laboratory, if you will, to provide us the venue to express the effort of putting this stuff into practical working activity and effort. It's not only my responsibility to visit people in the hospital. It's all of yours. It's not only my responsibility as a minister to call people to ask them how they're doing. It's all of yours. It's not only my responsibility to develop relationships with you to maybe have a friendship if I can, because we find ourselves getting along with each other once we introduce ourselves to each other and get to know each other over years and have actually an outside of church relationship with you. It's not only my responsibility to do that, it's yours too. Go golfing with each other, fix each other's car, spend time over each other's home. All that comes through this thing we call, this vehicle we call fellowship. Fellowship. And it's not always easy. It's not always easy. But nevertheless, it is very important. Let me show you over here in Hebrews chapter 10. It would be remiss of me not to bring this up. Chapter 10, the book of Hebrews. The writer states very clearly, "Let us draw near with a true heart, in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled with an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith, without wavering, without doubtful disputations. For he is faithful that promised." Verse 24, chapter 10, book of Hebrews. "And let us consider one another to provoke," and that basically means to encourage in this particular case, to encourage unto love and to good works. So let us consider one another and encourage each other unto good works. That means that can't be done without contact. I mean, you got to have contact, at least by the telephone. Bella needs contact. Bella needs contact from her friends, all of you, not just me, all of you as well. Diana needs contact. She's sick. She can't hardly drive. She comes into this building, she freezes to death, she says. Whether you believe that or not is not important. That's what she believes. That's all that matters, you see. These are the things that we need to get over and serve unjudgmentally in some respects. Because that's just the way it is. We need each other, brethren. We really do need each other. Fellowship is just that. Being a fellow toward each other in this respect. And a friend when need arises. Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves, verse 25, together, as the manner of some is. And oh, there are a lot out there who would just prefer to stay home. And to God's church, to the demise of God's church, to the sad part or sad side of God's church, there's unfortunately far too many of them who would prefer to stay home. But I understand it. It's not a criticism, because I understand it. A lot of people have been hurt over the last few decades from what has been considered to be organized religion, which organizations represent as organized religions. But that's sad. It really is. And somehow that trust and comfort level needs to be revived and recaptured on behalf of some of these. But not forsaking the assembling of themselves or ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And boy, it is, because it's very encouraging to be able to meet with people of like mind. Meet with people that agree with you on certain things, whether they be social issues, whether they be religious issues. Talking to individuals there in New York City when I was there last week, and talking to those individuals that do not have the background that we have in our church culture was a very delicate process, because some of them were there only for just a few reasons, of which were very limited because they've just been watching the Armor of God program for a few, maybe months, or in some cases a few years, and they find the information interesting, but not interesting enough to change a lifestyle. And that's true. There are people in God's church that find what we understand and meet among us and find what we understand is to be interesting. Garner Ted used to say that some people used to call him a good singer because of his preaching. And he figuratively would say that he was the singer, like the prophets, you know. They loved to hear the tune he would sing, figuratively speaking, meaning his preaching. But that's about it. It was a good song. Nothing to get hung about, as the Beatles would say, and nothing certainly to change your life around and actually take a whole day, since we're talking about the Sabbath, out of your life every week, 52 times a year, I might add, plus seven holy days on addition, 59 Sabbaths, unless one of them falls on a weekday. But the point of it is, you get my gist here, that, wow, that's a lot to ask from a person to take 55 plus days out of your life. That is going to change, guaranteed, brethren. You do that, it's going to change your lifestyle. Change mine. I don't shop anymore on Saturday. Just don't. I don't cut my grass anymore on Saturday. But when I left this morning, going here, my neighbor across the street, he was weeding and had his grass cutter out, so he was going to cut later on, I'm sure, this afternoon. That's just the way it is. The world does not understand these things. Now, tomorrow I'll be cutting my grass and he won't. I guess. Maybe he will too. I don't know as well. But the point of it is, the fact of this holy time being recognized by most people in the world, the point is, it is not. Acts chapter 17. I want to point something out, because the second suggestion I want to offer to all of us is that this holy time not only should be used for fellowship, but it should be also used study. It should be used for study. Here in Acts chapter 17, it was interesting to note in Paul's travels, as he states here in chapter 17 of verse 10, the brethren immediately sent away Paul and Silas by night to Berea, who, coming there, went into the synagogue of the Jews, verse 11 now. And there, these were more noble than those in Thessalonica. In that they received the word with readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily. These folks were really dedicated. 7 days a week they were studying the scriptures, according to the Apostle Paul here. And he said whether those things were so. So they were engaged and certainly very enlightened. Over here in 2 Timothy, the Apostle Paul, again, writing to this young man who was in his teens at this time. He was a young man, maybe around 17, 18, maybe 19 years old, but was well recognized by Paul to have certain potential, and one who Paul was very interested in mentoring and nurturing along the lines of ministry. And here in chapter 2, 2 Timothy chapter 2, he states here that in verse 15, giving Timothy this advice, "Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness." In other words, don't waste your time talking to a lot of people that are just filled with nonsense. I probably spent too much time this week writing an answer back to a man full of a lot of nonsense who wrote to me and called me all kinds of names, one of which was a canker of a man. "You're a canker of a man, Bill," he said to me in this letter. And he said, "I absolutely am full of nonsense. I don't know what I'm talking about," he said. "I watched your program on television and you're nothing but a hypocrite," he said to me in this letter that he wrote. And I told him I appreciated all of his opinions, but as my daughters have often told me, "You're entitled to your wrong opinion." And so consequently, I wrote him a letter and told him I would make an exception to the rule that I normally don't answer a fool according to his folly. But in this one case, I was cutting him some slack because I didn't want him to become wise in his own conceits. But at any rate, in 2 Timothy, Paul says the same thing to Timothy. "Shun these profane and vain babblings." You know, don't waste your time on them, because if, as it was said once before, if the devil can't get you direct, he will waste your time. And either way, you lose time in your life. And as a result, all of us only have 1,440 minutes a day. You multiply that out, as I did before a while back, and we do indeed have a limited amount of time. And time is your life. And so you should handle that time very preciously. And it goes back to what we're talking about in managing our time. We need to be very, very fiduciarily cognizant of how we spend our time, and very frugal about where we plug our attention into, because we have only so much of it. And guess what? You can't go back and recapture it. Once it's spent, it's spent. You can't go back and recover it. Once you're 17, you're only 17 once. Once you're 50, you're only 50 once. And as they say, it's all, I'm going to say, progressive, not downhill. Progressive from that point on. You know, it's not downhill, it's just progressive. And consequently, my point again being that life is limited. And it is very limited. And so we need to plan to make time to study. Very important. Take time to spend extra time in prayer. Doing the spiritual things. Meditate. Go out in your backyard if you have a nice quiet backyard or someplace where you can have quiet. Maybe put your Bose headphones on so you can lock out all the noise around you or whatever you have, that you can have some quiet time somewhere. And think about the things that you study. Don't just read through it. Think about it. Let it percolate a little bit. Let it metastasize. Let it take root in you as you read down through the Psalms or the Proverbs and try to remember some of these words of wisdom of which the Bible is full of. Because disciplining ourselves to forget our problems, to unplug our problems, unplug us from our problems, will help us to neutralize the stress. You got to have that time, brethren, to unplug. I've told you time and time again, I can't watch 24/7 news anymore. I just can't do it. I got to unplug. Besides that, they end up repeating themselves anyway after a while. But you get my point. You've got to get away from it eventually at some point to get a new perspective on it. Allow yourself to have this perspective to your life, and you don't allow the small things to overwhelm you where they become bigger things. Again, it's been said, you have control. You have control on how big your problems can get because you control your problems right here between your ears. So therefore, you have the choice on how big that problem is going to become. And you have the sovereign right to cut the legs out of that problem, to control it more so that you stay within your limitations of your stress levels and, of course, your objectives and your commitments so you don't get distracted from them. Because there are more important things in life that we deal with that we need to be aware of so that we don't allow our lives to get out of control. Third, let me suggest this as well as another piece of advice to help us keep focused and plugged into the Sabbath. We talked about fellowship. We talked about taking time to study. And we need, thirdly, to take personal time with family, friends, and brethren. And that means also that sometimes you can't do it all on one Sabbath. This comes into the point of planning. Because, see, sometimes you can't just take care of the kids on the Sabbath and go visit somebody in the hospital on the Sabbath and do it all on one Sabbath. So maybe you got to start planning. You look at your Sabbath and you say, you know what? Every second Sabbath I'm going to visit a sick person. Or every third Sabbath I'm going to spend an hour on the telephone calling people that I haven't seen in a while. And it doesn't necessarily always have to be people in the church. Family that are not in the church. Friends that are not in the church also. Because they're human beings too. Sometimes I think we get so focused on the church that we become, if we're not careful, almost cultish. Don't want to be that way. We're human beings on planet Earth with a lot of fellow human beings who need love, they need charity, they need attention, they need your time, especially if they're related to you or especially if they're friends of yours, even outside of the church. Let me emphasize that. Because I know some of you, too, in addition, have unconverted mates, not in the church, not interested in this cultural view of theology. And they don't share your perspective on God and don't agree with, perhaps, the same holy days that you keep and observe. Those are things you've got to deal with. And, of course, there are relatives within our families that obviously don't share that same perspective. And we need to be aware of how we can still stay in contact, still stay plugged in, and still show concern and care, especially if they get sick. I mean, just because they're not in the church and they're sick in the hospital and they're a family member or a friend of yours, my, on the Sabbath day, on that Sabbath that you choose if they happen to be, or maybe it's not the Sabbath that you choose to go to visit other people or call people. It's out of order, but now because it's an emergency, they're in the hospital, take the time, go. It's right to do well on the Sabbath. That's doing well on the Sabbath, you see. But I think sometimes we think, well, that's a lot of things to do on the Sabbath. But no. What I'm saying is you got four Sabbaths and four times a year? Yeah, four times a year you have five Sabbaths per month to plan how you're going to spend your Sabbath. And if you have young children, you're going to spend your Sabbaths a little bit different than if you have teenagers. If you have no children, you're going to spend your Sabbath a little bit different in that regard as well. If you're not married and you're single, you're going to spend your Sabbath a little bit different again in addition. And I say that only because that's just the dynamics of things. But we do have that, and here's the point, extra time to spend with the family and with friends, with others, to discuss the more important things of life. Let's call it the spiritual things. And again, the challenge is staying on point of attempting to try to achieve these particular objectives and goals that the Sabbath should serve us for and toward to make our lives more relaxed, more manageable, our attitudes more controlled, and of course, our relationship with God by doing these things, of course, stronger in our connection with Him as we walk in this relationship that we're trying to build. The Sabbath, brethren, let me reemphasize, is a tremendous tool. And it was given to us to benefit ourselves as well as benefit others from the Holy Spirit expression during this time that we've been given. And of course, hopefully, if we use it right, will give us the bounce in our step, the smile in our face, to provide the energy necessary and the commitment necessary to approach the other 6 days during the week where you bring sunshine to people. Recently, I've tried to make a commitment to myself. I'm trying to compliment somebody, every day. Somebody. I don't care if it's a guy at the gas station or a gal at the cash register. Somebody. I'm looking for a nice tie, a nice dress, a pair of sandals. I told a woman the other day on the airplane, you know, those sandals, she had rivets on the sandals. You know, I said, that's a pretty nice pair of sandals. She smiled, boy, she lit up. It's like, wow, I'm not asking for a date. I'm just complimenting your sandals, you know. I say that kiddingly. I'm sure, I didn't even know she thought I was good looking. Who knows, you know. But I'm just saying, you compliment. I'm trying to do this for me. Little things, goals, objectives. And so you try to put this extra bounce in your life and make other people, perhaps from the energy that you bring to the table, a little bit more pleasant and livable. Because I'll tell you, people are stressed today. There's a lot of stress out there. There really is. And you can see it in the eyes of people. Whether it be because of employment, whether it be because of health, whether it just be because of all the things around us that we see and we hear about and we watch on television, there is a lot of stress going on. So keep in mind these particular things. Plan to attend church services in your Christian walk. Plan to fellowship, brethren. Plan to take time on the Sabbath day to add a little bit more time to your prayer. Add a little bit more time to your study. Add a little bit more time to your meditation when and if you can. That's what the Sabbath is all about. Make it special. Friday night, I know when my girls were little, my wife Margie and I, we would always try to make the Friday night as the sun was setting special. We would have always a dinner Friday night. I would try to certainly be home on time, and most of the time I was home every Friday night on time, but sometimes, unfortunately, I was still driving home. But on most cases, we always tried to have a special dinner, something that brought us all together on that Friday night as the Sabbath was beginning and commencing, and then a Bible study perhaps occasionally from time to time we would use on that Friday night. But that was a plan, you see. And then that was a discipline, a commitment not to allow intrusions to occur or interruptions to divert. It's tough. It is tough. I failed a lot, and And I know you fail a lot because we're all alike in that regard. The point of it is we need to try not to fail so much and make sure we stay level in this approach with our God. So do keep in mind, plan to attend services, plan that extra time in study, and of course plan to spend time with friends and relatives and others. Do well on the Sabbath. Plan a Sabbath during the month to just be devoted to making contact with others perhaps that you haven't had contact with, or go visit somebody that is a shut-in that you know about. Because we do have them in the church. You know who they are. If you don't, see me after services. I'll give you a few names. And most importantly, remember, keep the Sabbath holy.